So we're talking about the quality of life priority?
Yes, the quality of life issue around the Detroit incinerator, which goes back to the inception of the incinerator, because it is a garbage. They are burning garbage, you know. And, of course, the garbage includes a lot of things they shouldn't be burning, plastics and so forth, that end up emitting emissions that are harmful to people's health. And we have these high asthma rates, three times the rest of the state, and a lot of impact on people's public health that have been documented by the State Department of Environmental Quality and also by some studies at Wayne State University. So you have those effects, which are extremely important in terms of the surrounding community. But you also have the smells that come from not processing the garbage immediately when they bring it in, and not keeping that garbage burning, you know, so that it doesn't accumulate and deteriorate and can cause smells that are offensive to people. And it's become a more pronounced problem in the last 3 years since the ownership of the incinerator changed. They were bought by a Connecticut holding ventures company, an economic ventures company, that Atlas Holdings, that has now incorporated, and they had bought the incinerator, as we discussed earlier, and also the power plant associated with that, the steam plant. So because the plant basically has a lot of equipment that is not properly working, and because they keep the garbage stored too long before they burn it, or they make it into pellets. It's like an incinerator where they make it into pellets that they're going to burn, and you know, so they're stored okay. And so the smells have gotten much worse in the last 3 years than they were earlier, although they were always a problem. So with the outstanding number of violations that the company was cited with, they eventually, the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality recently issued a judgment against them, which fined them $350,000 fines and penalties that had to be paid because of these past violations that were not resolved. They were also ordered to put in a venting system, and they gave them 2 years to do that, which bring them through two summers, you know. So to redirect the air within the plant so that it doesn't go outside the plant and disturb the community. So these are based, I say, on is part of the Department of Environmental Quality's regulation. These are based on common tort law, where these plants are not allowed to disturb the quality of life of people and their surroundings. So they also, and part of this judgment is that in the future, that if they have these unresolved violations, that they would be paid $5,000 a day penalty when it's documented that the odors are coming from the plant. And then they have a timetable that they have to meet in terms of this new venting system that they install. And they have a timetable in terms of the paying off these penalties, as I understand it. So we've gotten a number of people involved through Zero Waste has through community meetings and a door-to-door activity, talking with, handing out information to people and talking with them about reporting these smells, so that the Department of Environmental Quality can come and verify that they have to verify where the smells come from. You know, so you have to get there before the smells just dissipate and just go into the air, you know, and move away from the immediate vicinity. So they have been, they are able to document them if staff people can get out there in time to ascertain where they come from. There are other sources in that area that are also creating these violations, but with Zero Waste, we're concentrating on the the role of the incinerator in this offensive smells that interfere with people's quality of life. Mm-hmm. So this is a part of regulation that we got involved in a more active way because they had gotten the incinerator had gotten a brownfields development grant from the state of Michigan where they were going to get something like $4.1 million because of, it's not a proper, we protested in public hearings, it's not it should not be a brownfield site because it's not in terms of, we understand the definition, it's not a brownfield site, but they did get the award. So we have been able to block their getting money from this brownfields because of these violations that were unresolved. And we got the state agreed that they would not give them the brownfields credits, tax credits, until they cleaned up the violations. So we've been able to block those that brownfields money for them for several years. So this is an important tool for us to work with. Mm-hmm. At the point where people report the smells, they also, we encourage them, they should be reporting whether they see black smoke coming out of the stacks or they smell anything that's not garbage, you know, because some of the pollutants that are emitted, some of the toxins that are emitted have an acrid smell. They have different kinds of smells that you can identify. And then whoever goes out to verify this, you know, will act on the basis of what people report. So we're telling people to describe, you know, what the smells, what does it smell like? Mm-hmm. You know? Okay. And there's a possibility that we would find locate to get some other. But these violations that the state attorney general has acted on recently were for the smells. And he mentioned in his announcement that. You know, in the sense economic development, you know, is important. You know, we all agree with that. But that it should not be a violation of people's quality of life. That's an important thing that we have to keep in mind also. So this is something that, you know, we're continuing on. When we work with the Wayne State University Environmental Law Center, we've been working with us on these violations because they have some legal, they can give us some legal help with good. Things like this. And so this has been a pride. This has been something we're very pleased with what we've been able to do in recent months on this to finally bring this to a head. And we hopefully they'll move ahead with whatever they have to do. But one of the basic problems here is that this is an old plant. And it needs to, we assume it's needing, they need to replace equipment. And they bought it, they bought it because they thought there would be a basis for making money, you know, would be economic. But, you know, you can't run a plant like that on a garbage incinerator. You can't make money on that unless the only way that they can keep going is to have heavy public subsidy, and the public. This is true all over. You know that they're not a good idea in terms of money making, mm-hmm. and the whole issue of trash and what we do with what we call trash, which is a lot of discarding things that are useful and could be used and could be reused, remanufactured. This is again a part of our culture that we've built a throwaway society, you know, and many people sanction that and they don't see anything wrong with it, you know, and we've got this whole throwaway business and got enshrined in all of these the way that we live, and it's wasteful, and it's in the case of a place like Detroit, we can't afford to. We can't afford this kind of life, you know. We need to be collecting all these materials, mm-hmm. and you're making reuse of what we can, of what people discard. And so this is one of the primary goals of Zero Waste Detroit, is that, you know, we want to get the curbside recycling that the city has now contracted out. We want that to be built up and be successful so that the materials that are collected can be used for economic development. And at this point, the contracts that the city entered into last September with two private companies to collect the city waste on the east side and the west side of Detroit, two different companies, that they get these, they were, part of their contracts was to do curbside recycling. And so we need to get those contracts underway. They had until December 31st of this year in order to launch the recycling programs, the pickups and collection. And so it's been a very slow startup. And the year is practically over. And as far as I know, they're still burning 95% of Detroit's residential waste. It's a figure that we have been led to have understood. So it's something that we need a lot of community education and a lot of understanding of the importance of this and what it could contribute to Detroit, and of course to other areas too. But as I say, this has been a focus of zero waste, you know, is to get massive recycling and then the economic development that goes with it, and to use alternative methods of disposing of trash that can't be burned, you know, and it should not be burned.
Right. Yeah, it's just causing extra unnecessary pollutants.
And as we discussed earlier, it's in an area, maybe 8 or 10 years ago, maybe, and I may not have, one of the staff people with the Sugar Law Center, she said there were, in that a mile radius around the incinerator, there were 100 different sources of air pollution.
Yeah, that 2.5 times the state average of asthma. This is shocking as well.
Yeah. And some Wayne State University staff, one of their graduate students and staff did a study that was published before we started the zero waste in 2007, and they compared areas where you had incinerators and where you didn't have incinerators, and then the health impacts of that. And of course, the asthma rates, low birth weights is another effect that they documented, low birth rates of newborn babies, and other respiratory, and it triggers, you know, other attacks, related to heart disease and so forth. So there's plenty of evidence that it's no good, and it's detrimental to people's health. There's no question about that. The question is, what do you do about it? And to date, we haven't solved this problem.
Well, we were talking in class, and one of your colleagues was interviewed and mentioned something about people that were incarcerated. They had a testing of their lead, and a lot of them were...
Was that in Jackson?
I believe so, yes.
Yes, the Jackson incinerator recently closed this year. That incinerator goes way, way back. And what I mentioned to you have to have public subsidy to keep these things going. And they used the steam from the incinerator to heat the prison. Mm-hmm. So it was, and it was this, it was an income from the what they charged to heat the prison, you know, using the steam from the incinerator that kept this incinerator going, you know, and that the Sierra Club was involved in that over a number of years, and finally in this past year they did close that incinerator. There's still one in Kent County. There's one in Genesee County, and our Detroit incinerator, and I don't think there are any others left in this state, municipal solid waste. But there is certainly an upsurge now of efforts to redefine the definition of renewables so that we have grandfathered in some incinerators in our old definition, which provided for solar and wind, and there's a bill in the state legislature at this time to open that, to change that so that you could burn tires and...
I just saw that in the newspaper about...
Yes, is it? We're hoping that will die in the Senate this week.
Yeah, it just seems ridiculous.
Or next week, but it did pass the House. And it would open up to burning many forms of waste, in quotes, and substances that have no business being counted as renewables or have no business being burned for plant generation. You know, we've got to find a way to run the plants without adding more pollution to what the emissions that they release.
There'll always be issues coming up. It's a fight against the power, you know. Seems like it. So.
Yeah. Well, the thing that's interesting now, the Tea Party types are not wanting to do anything to do with the government, you know. So in terms of some of these negotiations that are going on in this lame duck legislation, the Republicans need the Democratic votes for some of these bills. And this is one of the things that we're working on the transportation money, because traditionally the transportation money has a provision, this state transportation money, that 10% is available for non-road transportation. So public transit is non-road, bike trails are non-road, hiking trails are non-road. You have arrangements with crossing safety and with freight, bringing freight by roads and stuff. There's a lot of transportation that the state is involved in and should be involved in that are not roads. So the House bills that were passed this term did not include this 10% or any other provisions for public transit, whereas the Senate bill included that section of the old legislation that had the 10% set aside. And it also included a provision that Detroit could use 20% of its allocation for transportation for public transit. So those are two aspects of that bill that we're supporting. That any bills passed, you know, in terms of providing money for road repair should also include the public transit and non-road provisions that we've had, and then plus adding the possibility for Detroit to use a higher percentage. It's based on the size of the community, so it's Detroit, for transportation. So that'll be decided within the next week is what they're going to do in terms of a compromise between the House and the Senate bills. And the governor is supporting the Senate bill, and our Mayor Duggan is supporting it. So there are people working on it, but it's going to take some...
more pushing.
Yeah, some participation and so forth to see that we get these kind of things passed.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad we got to add that to it, because important.
Yeah. Now, I was going to say, I can give you this... This is the previous